Jay Beam and Jay Savitri, everyone. I'm Thanmori Soundarajan, and welcome back to the podcast, Cast in the United States with First Post. Today's episode is a conversation with our dear colleague, Maya Kamble. Maya recently wrote an op-ed in Al Jazeera about her experiences working as a Dalit woman in tech, and it was straight fire. We are excited she's joining us today, so let's get into it. Welcome, Maya and Jay Beam. So Maya, can you tell us what was your experience being an active Dalit woman in technology in the United States?
My experience as a technologist was working with Indians was very, very difficult. The main reason being when I started my career, I was already a human rights activist. I had been to many conferences and I was helping marginalized children, and my videos, some of the web pages of what work I was doing were all online when you Googled me. Early on in my career, I was not working with Indians, so I did not really see a pushback. But later on, when I changed my company and when I started working with Indians, where I had an Indian manager, I really saw how discriminatory he was. Initially, the discrimination was very implicit, that meaning he would really not recognize me talking in meetings or discussions. He would not take up my points, even though they were really valid. And this led my non-Indian colleagues to help me out. They were also noticing. It was so open that they were also noticing that this manager was biased against me, and they started helping me out in terms of what I wanted to get implemented because my suggestions were good and valid. So after 6 to 9 months down the line, he grew increasingly frustrated, and really his showing of bias against me was not working that much. And one day he said, I better not touch a tool because I was ill-fated. And this was like a shocker to me because he was coming up with a context of untouchability where previously were treated as untouchables because you were probably not pure enough or ill-fated or jinxed. So, I mean, this, I never imagined that caste would manifest like this to me in the United States. That too, after crossing all the barriers of country and after being educated in US, I never could imagine that caste would manifest to me in this way.
This is so important, especially for our listeners to understand, is that, you know, first of all, you know, Maya's like in a generation where she was one of the first Dalit technical engineers in the Valley and in the tech scene as a whole. So it was already an achievement for her to be here. But what's really interesting about what she's describing is that there was systemic bias in the workplace. Like, because her manager knew she was an Ambedkarite, he would continually ice her out of conversations until that breaking point where he called her ill-fated. And that's a challenge, I think, when you try to translate that to an American HR department, because they'll be like, oh, what? He called you unlucky? So what, right? But for those of us that are, you know, from this context, we know that being Dalit is being linked to inauspiciousness, bad luck, and that in particular, they use those terms related to Dalit women very often. And I think that the gap of having to explain that and also the way he wielded that at you is a lot of context to kind of share with an HR department. And, you know, if the reason why your story rang so true in terms of our experiences at Equality Labs is that we've heard many cases of similar staff members who were not allowed to touch things because of polluting things. In fact, this one scientist in Massachusetts was telling me that during his studies, the Brahmin professor wouldn't allow him to touch the petri dish because he felt that he would pollute the experiments because he was so unlucky. So this is not just luck without context. It has a whole history of centuries of caste bias and discrimination. And I wonder, you know, Maya, if you can share a little bit more about how that made you feel. What did your other coworkers do? And also, you know, did you report to HR? Why or why not?
Me, that day was so shocking to me, Tinmori, that I really did not know how to react in that particular moment. My colleagues were there and they said, that's probably not a sentence in a good taste. They immediately reacted. But I just froze at that point. But I thought over it over the night and I cried. I felt really bad that I went to the restroom and I cried. And after that, I thought over it over the night and I thought, I have to tell this to my HR. But I thought my HR was also American. And I was on a work visa, so I did not think that my HR would completely understand what I was trying to say. And if something doesn't go in my favor, then I would be looking at losing my work visa and green card because of this. But I still wanted to do something. And the first thing that came up to my mind is that I should confront my manager. And the very next thing that I did when I went back to office was I took him to a room and I just confronted him. And I told him that I did not appreciate his comments at all. That's when he apologized. And he also probably got some more feedback from my other colleagues because he said this in the presence of many colleagues. And he apologized to me profusely and, you know, started trying to correct his behavior. That was also one of the reasons why I thought to leave the matter over there and not go to HR. As you already said, right, it's very difficult for HR to understand the complete context because I thought they would think that this is a fight between just two brown people and they would not completely understand the context because caste is not a protected category in the United States. Even though majority of the workers in most of the big firm companies are from India, caste is still not a protected category. So there's no sensitivity around caste. People don't even know what caste means. So that was the reason. And work visa also puts in a lot of barriers on things of what you can and you cannot do.
Wow. So Maya, once you were struck with how hard it was to work with managers from Indian origins, what were some of the other options you had?
My first manager was a Black manager and he was so welcoming and I was able to thrive and learn so much and was able to show my work. And same with any other non-Indian manager, I really thrived in my job and I was accomplishing things. There was a sense of gratification that I had that I was doing something. With an Indian manager, it's mostly about I try to scramble myself to get something to, you know, to a manager's ear. And what used to happen was when people start to implicitly, you know, show bias against you, it affects a person's confidence. It affects the person's spirit of working. The workplace becomes hostile. So with non-Indian managers or colleagues, it's much more welcoming when we go for work and, you know, you're spending 8 hours or 9 hours a day at workplace. So you are happy when you're working there, you're happy. That's not the case with an Indian manager. For at least for me, I was always struggling to, you know, get over the politics of being from Dalit community and, you know, trying to figure out how to make my time worthwhile over there. So
and that's really an important point is that, you know, what's happening in these hostile workplaces has nothing to do with Dalit competence. It has everything to do with the way, you know, dominant caste people's bigotry and bias is actually affecting harmony and work product in the workplace. And, you know, I always love something that you said in another organizing conversation that we had where you were like, you know, it's very important to know that like when Dalits are not working under dominant caste people, we don't just survive, we thrive. And this question of implicit bias becomes a really crucial one, because I know that you've said in other contexts that what you're seeing is something that these people aren't even conscious of how bigoted they are. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. So there was another time, I would like to give an example, that one of my colleagues, you know, she had assumed that I was a Hindu, and she would call me to all these pujas. And being a woman, you know, they would think that I, you know, they would assume that I would go for pujas. And one day they called me two or three times and I did not go. They were very curious why I wasn't coming, because it's very unlike other Indian women, right? When I very politely told them that I'm Buddhist and I don't believe in the rituals, so that's why I wasn't coming, they were really shocked. And she made a comment saying that, oh, I did not know that there were any born Buddhists in India, implying that people from only lower caste would convert themselves to Buddhism. So I was like, that's when she knew what my caste was. She again started, making some other comments, and probably she told other Indian colleagues too. So I would see the difference in their behavior. They earlier used to eat lunch with me. They earlier used to hang out with me more. Here I was facing seclusion because of revealing who I was. And the main reason for even revealing that was because I was not going to their rituals or their traditional ceremonies. And it's not just one colleague, but when one colleague knows, all the Indian colleagues know about you. And you face seclusion from multiple people at the same time. You feel outcasted in your workplace at the same time. So the workplace environment becomes hostile. And they're not even explicitly saying it out. It shows in their behavior. It implicitly shows in their behavior. They're treating you as someone from a below caste. Even though I was educated in US, I did my master's in US, and probably they haven't done that. I was senior to them in terms of my position at workplace. They were junior to me, and still they were showing an implicit bias, knowingly or unknowingly. They would also talk about reservations, how it had ruined their lives because someone in their family couldn't get into college or university. But here we are all equal, and they are still showing that bias against. And it would naturally come out to them. They, you know, it would be an effort for them to stop that conversation. So it was so natural for them to just say those things.
It was very interesting that you said that there was a question about pujas and an invitation that you declined, and from there, even questions about your religion, because those questions essentially help your peers socially locate your caste. And this is a really painful truth, because these inquiries are not about building intimacy. They're about establishing caste hierarchy. And there is no innocent motive in asking these things. And for our listeners who are not South Asian, you have to understand, this is really our paper bag test for our community. The litmus test of our caste appropriateness comes out of these really invasive questions related to religion, eating practices, even our villages of origin. And it is so stressful, and it's part of what makes up a hostile casteist workplace. So to that point, Maya, how did you deal with these questions and work? And what workarounds would you recommend for other caste-oppressed people who are listening in our audience?
I mean, the workaround that I found was, you know, either to work for yourself, that is by being an entrepreneur. The other option is to work in an environment where your colleagues are non-Indians, because it's very stressful to change other people. And as I said, caste is in their DNA. The biases are so internalized that it's very difficult for us to change Indian colleagues unless they want to change themselves. And it's not my responsibility to change them, right? So for me, I want to grow in my career. I want to thrive in my career. So the workaround that I found was, to find a place where I have non-Indian colleagues. Because that way I'm not stressed about what these Indian colleagues know about me and how they would show biases against me. So I'm not stressed about that anymore.
Maya, you've been a personal inspiration to our team because we don't know many other Dalit feminist technologists, and yet you've been in it in the trenches, fighting the fight both in the workplace, but also in our community. And, you know, it means a lot because we know that there's also, you know, after the Cisco case came, you know, Equality Labs got over 250 new rapid response complaints from Dalits all around the country who are complaining about casteism in tech. And in those stories, there was a significant group of Dalit women who were saying they were also facing sexual harassment. They were disgusted by Indian bosses and the way that they treated caste oppressed people, and they were just done. And so I think with your courageous work and also your leadership, I'm just curious, Maya, if you can share with our audience, like, what do you think are the next steps we need to do to stop this problem right in its tracks?
I really appreciate John Doe from Cisco Case who had the courage to bring the issue up and to take it in the court so that he could get justice. And because of him, I have found my courage to come up and talk about my stories so openly as well. You also mentioned that Equality Labs has got more than 250 complaints. All of this might be just the tip of the iceberg. So I think the next steps should be to recognize, caste as one of the protected categories, specifically in the areas where there are so many Indians working. Because wherever there are Indians, caste goes with them. Wherever they live, they make sure that they are in the groups of caste. Wherever, they dine, they do the same. So I think the main thing would be to make sure wherever Indians are, to sensitize them about caste, and wherever they're working, the caste should be added as a protected category, so that we also feel that same level of protection, and we also can report any sort of discrimination that happens to our HR and get justice from there. And this would really enable people like us who are here despite of the nepotism that goes on in getting jobs. Despite of all of that, we have overcome and we are still thriving. If we are here, then it would give us a better opportunity and it would free our minds of working just for non-Indians, but it would really help us to work in any sort of environment and will help us thrive, because now we are limiting ourselves to working with non-Indians, right? So we want that independence. If that happens, I think that would be one of our biggest wins. Because we are talking about more than 260 million people worldwide who are from untouchable caste. So it's a very, very big population that we are talking about. And the problem is also that big.
Yeah, I think that, Maya, again, I'm so grateful for you to speak up, because we've actually had very few Ambedkarite women that feel comfortable speaking forward because of the concerns, not just of H-1B, but also about their worries in terms of, experiencing continued harassment in their workplace. So your voice is actually speaking for many women who share this experience but are not able to speak in the same way. So I'm very grateful for you sharing your thoughts with us today. And also want to remind people that if you're moved by any of the stories that we've told on this podcast, it's really important that you take that inner change inside of your heart into action. And there's lots of ways for people to get involved in terms of this battle. And I think first and foremost, get educated about it. So come visit our website at equalitylabs.org and you can read the CAST survey and, you know, weigh in and bring your thoughts and engage with us on social media. But we also have a petition right now to add CAST as a protected category. And this is really crucial because without the protected category, many CAST oppressed people who are dealing with workplace discrimination or discrimination in educational environments, you name it, are not able to raise their cases because of the lack of cultural competency and also just the lack of familiarity people have in understanding what caste discrimination is. And so that protected category would actually open up so many things, like including data collection, so we know how large caste impacts people, but also would allow us to then really be able to work towards the ideal outcome, which is intercaste, interfaith workspace spaces that are harmonious and where all people can survive, but also thrive in equity. And so, you know, Maya, thank you again. And before we close, I just want to see if you had any last thoughts before we wrap our session today.
Yeah, I mean, also because I have kids and I have seen many parents talk about Hindu religion and, you know, coming and openly speaking about a few festivals in schools. So what happens there is they are implicitly teaching caste supremacy also to their kids. So what is happening is even the next generation that which is growing up in United States are growing up thinking that either one is superior and the other person is not. So just to give you an example, I have a Buddhist friend and the teacher who had a kid in the kindergarten, and the teacher automatically thought that she would be celebrating Diwali, and it was an American teacher who asked her, and she said, no, we don't celebrate Diwali because we are Buddhist. And there was another 5-year-old kindergartner who heard this and went and told their mom and dad, and the mom and dad said, oh, they might be from lower caste and we are from upper caste. And this 5-year-old comes back and sings, you are a lower caste, you are a lower caste. So what is happening I'm just giving this example to you guys because I just want to share that other than workplace, at home also, kids are learning to be biased against so-called lower caste people. And this is happening at such a small age. If we don't sensitize people about caste, even in United States, the same pattern of discrimination that is happening in India or has happened for thousands of years now will continue to happen in United States too. So I really thank you for calling me in and giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts. And thanks for all the good work that you're doing. I just hope that whatever work we are doing helps caste to be added as a protected category, even in schools, so that kids learn not to discriminate.
Well, and this is so important because let's be clear, you know, if dominant caste people are left to their own devices, they would actually turn, you know, all of the United States into Agraharam United States. You know, they will not stop unless we put a stop to it collectively as a community. And I think that's really one of the most important takeaways that I really want to flag for people is that it's so natural that people start to train their children at such a young age to start to say someone is upper, someone is lower. Imagine, why does a 5-year-old in the United States need to care about if someone being upper or lower, right? And all that because of a difference of faith. And, you know, I think that this is so important for people to consider is that, you know, a lot of these things we can't have open conversations in India and our home countries because of the impunity of caste and because dominant caste people are in charge of many institutions, including the media. We are not openly able to talk about this. But in the United States, we don't have such restraints. And in the United States, we have freedom as Dalit people, in part to many of the struggles Black people have led on behalf of all to have civil rights. And I think that in that honor of struggle, we really have a commitment to our own freedom and a commitment to call dominant caste people in to do better, you know, to do better and to be more conscious about their biases and to, you know, we have a workshop in our organization called Unlearning Caste Supremacy, where thousands of dominant caste people are unlearning their casteist biases. And it's tough work because a lot of things that they've been taught is proper Indian culture is actually proper casteist culture. And they've not been in engagement with a caste oppressed people before. So when they start to actually have meaningful, authentic relationships where Dalit peoples are at equity with the table, it's an eye opener for them because they don't even realize, wow, some of the holidays I'm celebrating are celebrating Bahujan death, or, oh, wow, okay, that even Dr. Ambedkar exists. Dr. Ambedkar, I remember growing up in the diaspora and as a young person here, nobody thought Dr. Ambedkar was significant. I was told by a professor that Dr. Ambedkar was not a significant Indian leader. And only after I started to interact with other Dalits, I was like, what is this nonsense that's coming out of people's mouth? You know, he is the architect of the Indian Constitution. He laid the path for so much of the caste, anti-caste movements we have today. And here we have some dominant caste professor saying he is not a significant Indian. Can you imagine? But yeah. I think that's actually why, like, Dalit feminism has been such a very powerful antidote to this, you know, Brahminical hegemony, because in many ways we've been able to bring an intersectional lens of power building that is inclusive not just of ourselves but of everybody. And so I'm just really inspired by you both as leaders, and I'm really honored by the movement that we're holding and building together. Because again, this is not a movement that is about one single leader. It's really a leaderful movement where you see so many people with lots of different skill sets taking power, bringing voice. And we want dominant caste people to join us by doing that work. They need to unlearn their caste biases and they need to deeply listen and be in partnership with caste oppressed people. And they need to join this movement because if they aren't, they're on the wrong side of history. And, you know, in 2020, one thing is true. We are not standing back or going to be in the closet. We are going to step forward with courage and power until we annihilate caste. So with that, I just want to thank everybody who's joined us, you know, out in the listeners. And also thank Maya again for being such a powerful voice for Ambedkarite women and Ambedkarite women in tech. And, you know, JBeam and Jay Savitri, everybody.